Who is to blame when your Netflix bogs down like the data is caught in the sand or something? I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update, a key regulatory issue guiding the great shift from regular television to online digital TV are intentional bottlenecks. This is called throttling, and Netflix likes to accuse internet service providers of squeezing down the data flow. But as the Wall Street Journal first reported, it turns out that Netflix is also slowing down its own data in certain cases for people who want to watch shows on smartphones. For some help with this, we turn to technology reporter Brian Fung at The Washington Post.
Because video uses up a lot of your data, people who are on plans that have really strict data caps could wind up going through those data caps really quickly if they watch a lot of Netflix. So Netflix doesn't want you to blow through your data cap all at once just by watching a whole bunch of Netflix. So what it does is that it restricts the speed of your video stream to about 600 kilobits per second, which is just above the minimum bandwidth required for Netflix to even work on a device. Netflix's own site recommends that you have a connection speed of about six times as much just to watch a standard definition stream.
But this is a shift in the story because there had been dark suspicions that the internet service providers are somehow crimping the style of Netflix because often the internet service providers have rival TV services.
That's right. What we haven't really talked about yet is Netflix's role in trying to set internet policy. It's been very active in Washington in trying to get regulators to intervene against internet providers who, it has accused in the past of trying to meddle with internet traffic or slow down Netflix's speeds. And so it's kind of ironic now to see Netflix taking advantage of some of these similar tactics.
Irony indeed. Brian Fung covers tech for The Washington Post. Brian, thank you.
My pleasure.
And after much speculation, there's also news that Apple has figured out what its first big TV show will be about as it tries to go up against the likes of Netflix and Amazon to produce original content. Imagine the possibilities given House of Cards on Netflix or Transparent on Amazon Prime. Apple's new show, ready for this, will be an unscripted series about smartphone apps. Before we judge, know that the wonderful Will I Am of Black Eyed Peas will be helping with this. Now to a big shift at Sony. It's forming a new company called ForwardWorks, which will make games for smartphones starting in Japan. For the most part, Sony's been focusing on making expensive games for its PlayStation console, Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports.
The mobile gaming market is a $35 billion opportunity, according to market researcher Newzoo. But unlike console games, the money comes in very small doses.
Smartphone gaming doesn't make nearly as much profit margin.
Melissa Schilling is a management professor at NYU's Business School. Popular smartphone games sell for nothing, making money by purchases people make while playing. That means Sony has to figure out how to make games that appeal to a lot more people.
It doesn't mean that Sony can't be successful in this market, but it's going to have to work a lot harder at it.
Don't mistake Sony and Nintendo's smartphone moves as abandoning hardcore console gamers. That's still a strong business, one set to transform as virtual reality improves. Macquarie analyst Ben Schachter says smartphone gaming opens up a whole new market.
It's much more about a casual experience that can be played very quickly, much more about an experience that can be enjoyed by many different demographics.
Young and old, male and female, everybody with a smartphone is now in Sony's crosshairs. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Most financial markets are closed around the world today. The S&P 500 on this Good Friday is down 1.2% year to date. They left us with crude just under $40 a barrel, a euro costing less than $1.11, and a 10-year Treasury yield at 1.9%. When it comes to money, there are no guarantees. There is always, always an element of risk, except in one area, or so we thought. Marketplace regular and Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan joins us now. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, David.
After all these years of covering money in markets, you thought you had identified one fail-safe investment. What was this instrument?
Forever stamps.
Like from the post office?
Like from the post office.
Right. The stamp with no denomination, always and forever, until the universe pulls back on itself and shrinks everything into a black hole. That forever stamp would be good for the postage on a first-class letter, but no?
Well, yes, except now for the first time in almost 100 years, it looks like the price of a first-class letter could drop.
Oh, wait. So the cost of mailing it could – why?
It's a strange, complicated, regulatory thing. Basically, on April 10th, unless something happens between now and then, the price of a first-class stamp is going to drop to 47 cents from 49 cents, where it's been since January of 2014.
And you get stuck with these stinking forever stamps that cost you 49 cents. And what, if you, each time you use it, potentially, you'd lose 2 cents?
Right. You have lost the opportunity to pay 47 cents to mail something.
How many of these stamps are you using in a month, my friend?
Well, not very many, but I still use some. And I have about 150 of these things in my house because I don't want to have to go wait online in the post office.
Yeah, and I buy them one at a time, which is probably not smart. But is there a lesson here for us in the possibility that mailing might get cheaper, therefore you'd be overpaying if you used it forever?
Yeah, the lesson I've learned is that just when you think you have figured something out, you realize that nothing is forever.
You know, Alan, you no longer have to be dead to be on a U.S. stamp. I vote for an Alan Sloan stamp because you, sir, are a first-class kind of a guy.
And we have to think outside the envelope.
All right, we'll stop now. Mr. Sloan is also editor-at-large at ProPublica. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, Dave.
Actually, why leave it at that? This is why he's called a Washington Post columnist. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.